Okay, good morning, good night of Shabbos. Welcome back to the Sfas Emes Shir. This week's learning at our Kolo is sponsored Lili Nishmas Yoshua Ben Alexander. And specifically, this Shir is sponsored, it's a special sponsorship for me. It's sponsored by Safti, by my wife's grandmother, in memory of Rabbi David Kamenetsky, Rabbi David Steven, Rabbi Yosef Vishalamis. That's my wife's grandfather who passed away 5 years ago. His yard site was just 2-3 days ago. So we're learning this morning Lili Nishmaso. And in fact, hopefully, if we get to it, towards the end, we'll make a comment that relates to Zaidi as well. So the Psukim in Parshas Baaloscha, if you look in source number one, the Psukim tells the story of the Asaf Suf. The Asaf Suf, where the Rashi tells us they were, you know, mysterious individuals. Rashi tells us they're part of the Erev Rab. I think article translates anyone here do is Trimakri as the rabble of Klal Yisrael, something like that. So the rabble, it seems like a spot on word for them. The rabble of Klal Yisrael were his Avu Taiva. They were. They had some desire. They became hungry. They were ravenous. They were excited to have some food. Vayashuva yivku gam bnei Yisrael. The whole Klal Yisrael got dragged along, ensnared in their way of having taiva. And vayomru miyachilenu basar. And therefore they complained. They called out to Kadosh Baruch Hu, "Who's going to feed us meat?" So Rashi here comments. Rashi points out the Sfasim has quotes that I didn't put on the page, but Rashi points out that it's an interesting thing. Because really we know from the Psukim that especially the Eir of Rav had meat. They had cattle that came out with Eretz Yisrael with them. Even when they got to the cusp of getting into Eretz Yisrael, they had cattle, they had meat. And we say that from the Psukim. So why would it be that they're so misaved, they're so ravenous, they're so hungry, and they're yelling out, "Who's going to feed us basar? You have basar, what are you complaining about? If you want, shech the cattle and have meat." So why are they so upset? So Rashi says an answer. Rashi says, not really that they didn't have meat. They did have meat. Of course they had meat. No, but shemevakshin alila, which means they were searching for a pretext. They were looking for a reason, an excuse to complain. These were a bunch of complainers. By nature, they were complainers. You know people like this. It's not necessarily true that the thing that's happening is such a big deal, but they're by nature, they're complainers. So they're looking for an excuse to complain about each thing. So the Asaf Suf, they were that type, and then Klal Yisrael following along with them, they were looking for an excuse to complain. They were looking for a pretext to complain. So they said, here's a good reason to complain, because we don't have meat. What's the obvious question on Rashi? What's that? They had meat, so it's not a good pretext. Yeah, if you're someone who's looking to complain, you have to at least find a good reason to complain. So they said, we really do have meat, but we want a reason to complain, so let's complain that we don't have meat. What do you mean? You do have meat. So the Sfas Emes says, something else must be going on over here. So the Sfas Emes says like this, V'kashe maya lili yesh me'achash haya lahem, the first line, we're going to the second line. Ach yesh lomar dechsiv his avu taiva. This is an interesting word, no? What would you say if you want to say that the Klal Yisrael were desirous, they were hungry? Hisavu. They were misave. They had a taiva, they had a desire. The pasuk doesn't say that. The pasuk says, hisavu ta'ava. They desired a desire. What does that mean? They desired a desire. So the Sfas Emes is like this. Mashma shelo ha'ilem taiva. Be'emes, in truth, the Klal Yisrael didn't have a taiva. They weren't hungry. They didn't want for anything at that point in the Midbar. Because once they passed through Har Sinai, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu had raised them up, had lifted them to this lofty level, where they didn't desire anything gashmi, they didn't desire anything physical, they weren't craving any food or any sustenance at all. They were living on a plane above and beyond the natural world. And the Klal Yisrael didn't need meat. They didn't need basar. It wasn't something that was on their level. Cheres mi'etzahara. They were completely free from any Yetzirah, from any taiva, from any desire for anything in this world. That's where they were living. Ulekach, the Klal Yisrael thought like this. Haya nirlahem shenachon shiyelahem taiva. They thought, really, we should have a desire. We should want to have meat. V'sheyizku lasos nachas ruach l'Hashem Yisbarach al yidei sheyochlu b'kdusha af besar gashmi. The Klal Yisrael say, we're living here as angels, we're living here as malachim, but that's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. He doesn't want us to be malachim. He has malachim in the upper worlds. He wants us to be human beings. He wants us to want things. He wants us to have the Yetzirah and to beat the Yetzirah, or to use the Yetzirah in a way for Kedusha, to use the Yetzirah to direct it, to channel it, to orient it towards Kedusha. So we want to desire meat in order that we should eat meat as Shabbos Suda, in order that we should eat meat to strengthen us to learn Torah. We want to have these gashmi, these physical desires, in order to utilize them for Avodas Hashem. So they said, his avu taiva. They said, we want to have a taiva. We want to be having a yetzahara to enjoy this world. Then we'll use that yetzahara for good. Give us that challenge, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right now, it's too easy. We're living like Malachi Asharis. Unbelievable. That's why they say, Zesha Amru, Klal Yisrael say, Nafshenu Yevesha. They say our souls are dried out. When they're trying to express the fact that they're quote-unquote hungry, his avu taiva vayomer mi'achilenu basar, so Klal Yisrael expressed that by saying, nafshenu yevesha, our souls are dried out. Shelo kimu b'kol nafshechem. The Sfas Emes says, it's not that Klal Yisrael are saying, oh, we're so hungry. They're saying our nefesh is hungry. We're missing something in terms of avodas Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be challenged and wants us to grow from those challenges. We're not being challenged. It's too easy for us. We're not even hungry. So they said, Nafshenu Yevesha. Yeah, we're physically filled. We're physically satiated. That's true. But our nefesh is pining for something more. Challenge us. Give us a taiva. Give us hunger, and we'll hopefully use it for the good. And on one level, that's a beautiful complaint. No? That's a derech of avoda. They're looking to be challenged. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, that is not what I want from you. That is not what I want for you. It's true. Whatever challenges we are going to appreciate this. It's true. Whatever challenges we have, we are supposed to utilize the challenges and grow from them. That's absolutely true. Every challenge HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us is a nisayon as a test and also a nisayon as a flag. Something which raises us up proudly that we rise above that challenge and use the challenge to propel ourselves to the next stage. But if you look in the final bold in this source, against the Sfas Emes in the second paragraph here, Avalo hutvu divreim l'Hashem Yisbarach, Kadosh Baruch Hu did not like this complaint. Why not? Shetzarich ha'adam lios chared yoser lira pen yivat del chas shalom ratzon Hashem Yisbarach v'lo yavi atzmo lidei nisayon. Says Hashem, I understand that you want to be challenged, but we say every single day in our tefillos, v'lo lidei nisayon. We don't want to challenge ourselves. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you a challenge, you want to utilize the challenge, you want to grow from the challenge, you want to propel yourself to the challenge, that's Avodas Hashem. We don't ask for more nisyonos. We don't ask for more challenges. We don't put ourselves in a situation where we're going to be challenging ourselves, our family, we're going to be hurting our cause in order to try to find a way to grow from it. I know a person, he's not, no one here knows him, he's not from around here, but he sends his kids to a certain school. Or I think, I don't know if he does, but in theory, he was telling me he would send his kids to a certain school. Now, the school is way beneath, in terms of hashkafa, in terms of seriousness, commitment to mitzvahs, the school is way beneath the level of his family. So we had been talking about, why would you send your child to a school that's, you know, that's not to par with what you're trying to teach your family? So this is an interesting approach in chinuch, but he said he wanted to challenge his family. That even in a place where the school is beneath them, they're going to show that they're above, they're going to grow from it, they're going to bring other people up with them. I said, kiruv is a beautiful thing for the people around you and for your family. But you don't ask for more nisyonos. You don't put your family in a situation where it doesn't fit, where there's a tide that they're swimming against. And now you have to educate against the school, and you have to educate the kid against the school, and the kid has to now, the kid's going to be a makariv in 8th grade against all the kids who are doing differently than him. It doesn't make any sense. It's crazy. So that's not chinuch, that's not Torah mitzvos. Torah mitzvos is taking the challenges HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us and succeeding, excelling, and pushing past them. But it's not asking for more nisyonos. It's not putting us into a situation where we want more challenges. So says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, very beautiful that you want to come closer to me, but don't ask for more challenges. His avu taiva, no, don't ask for more desires. Be mekayim the mitzvos, do what you're supposed to do, do the ratzon Hashem as the ratzon Hashem is, and in the current state. Take the challenges you have now and excel at those, but don't bring more upon yourself. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets upset here after his avu taiva vayomru mi'achilenu basar. They didn't really want meat. They wanted the challenge of wanting meat. Hashem says, don't ask for more challenges. It's interesting, that line, nafshenu, that's yavesh, that our souls are dried out. So the Sfas Emes has another really fascinating comment here in source number 2, Shnas Tafresh Mem Zayin, 1887. The Sfas Emes quotes from an Alshech, the Alshech in Parshas Beshalach by Parshas Aman. So he says that the man was a type of sustenance, but you'll notice that the Chazal tell us that the man was the Meichel of Malachim. It was the food, the sustenance of really of angelic beings. It wasn't really sustenance for human beings. It wasn't a physical food. It was something which sustained a nefesh more than a guf. And the Al-Sheikh comments that it's interesting in the other direction also. We don't think about this enough, but it's very fascinating. It's really a miracle that food sustains us at all. Because physical food, meat, bread, all the food that we eat, all the food that we consume in our physical world, so that has physical properties, and it understandably, scientifically, biologically, it sustains our body, our guf. But our body is made up of two parts. There's a guf, which is physical, and there's a neshama, which is completely spiritual, which is our animating life force. It's the thing that keeps us going. So how is it that a physical food sustains the neshama? So that's a miracle. That is a miracle. The fact that we're sustaining our guf, our neshama should be floating somewhere else, and either we should die or we should be living as just as behemoths. How could it be that lechem, food, allows us to have both? So the Netziv has a beautiful comment. The Netziv, I believe it's located in Parshas Pinchas. Because the Pesukim in Pinchas tell us that as karbani lachmi li shai reich nichochi tishmu lakriv li b'ma'ado, the karbanos that we read about on Rosh Chodesh are referred to as lachmi, as karbani lachmi. Lechem, it's not a lechem karban, it's an animal karban. So why do we refer to it as bread? Lechem. And you find this in other places as well in the Chumash, that the karbanos are often sometimes referred to as lechem, even though they're not always bread karbanos. Sometimes they have bread accompanying them, but the karban itself is not bread, it's not lechem. So the Netziv says, because the word lechem, we use it colloquially to mean bread, but it really comes from a different source. He points to a medrash in Sefer Vayikra, not a medrash, a Taras Kohanim, in Sefer Vayikra, where the word lach malchimim, malachimim, is used to connote binding, bringing things together. When they were building the Mishkan, they bound two poles together, they were malchim, the two poles together, mem, lam, and ches, yud, mem. And it says, what you see is that the shoresh, lamed, ches, mem, means to bind, to combine, to bring things together, to merge. And the Netziv comments that what lechem means by all bread, every time we use it, it means bread. But the reason it means bread is because bread is the thing which binds the neshama to the guf, which keeps the neshama from leaving the guf, which keeps us able to live and breathe with our body while still having a neshama. And karbanos, in the very same vein, says the Netziv, bind us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's true, it's not lechem in the literal sense of bread, but it's lechem in the sense of it binds us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It brings two things that don't naturally stick together. It brings them together. It's madbik, two things together. He points out that also in Chazal, lechem refers to Torah. Torah binds us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. There are other instances of this too. Interesting instances, not for now. But you have this binding nature of a sustenance that it keeps the neshama, the nefesh, with the guf. That's a miracle. But the Al-Sheikh says, if the miracle can work in one direction, it can work in the other direction also. The same way physical food can sustain a spiritual neshama, so too spiritual food can sustain a physical guf. Spiritual food, a mazon ruchni, can help a guf have chiyus as well, and it combines and it binds and it merges the nefesh with the guf. And he says that was what was happening with the man, with the mazon, the sustenance of this angelic sort of food. How does that work? So if you look in the second line here in source number 2, the Sfas Emes, the very end of the line, Ube'emes nireh, shahakol hu lefi matzav ha'adam. Everything depends on the person. We can't understand this. How could you eat a fake food, a spiritual food that doesn't exist in our physical plane, and that keeps you alive? How could that sustain you? How is that possible? It doesn't make any sense. No, it depends on your perspective on life. It depends on how you live your life. Im ha'guf tafel al nefesh, nizon hu b'masam nefesh. Yeah, we're so physical. We're so megushamdik, which is French for physical. We're so physical that it's hard for us to imagine eating spiritual food and staying alive, because we are bodies mostly. But if we had the perspective in our lives that we're really neshamas, we're neshamas who have a vehicle of a body that walks us around this world so that we could be mekayim mitzvos, so we can make the world a better place. That's why we have a guf. But be'etzem, we're really just a neshama, essentially. That's all we are, is spiritual being. So then when we ate spiritual food, we'd stay alive also. We'd stay alive also. They said on the Vilna Gaon, the Vilna Gaon never ate. He sat in a closet and learned all day long. He didn't really have too many talmidim. He didn't have a shul. He didn't do much other than learn and learn and learn and learn and learn. He also didn't eat that much. They say about the Vilna Gaon that he used to say on himself that the hardest mitzvah for him to be mekayim, the hardest mitzvah for him to fulfill, was Simchas Yantif, because it was so hard for him to eat food in such a way that he enjoyed it, because his body, his stomach was so shrunken from not eating all week that he didn't enjoy food when he came Shabbos and came Yantif. The hardest thing for him to do was to enjoy Shabbos and Yantif. It's an unbelievable thing. Physically, he just deprived himself of food completely. But we don't have pictures. We have some drawings. Who knows how accurate they are? But they say the Masorah is that the Vilna Gaon wasn't extremely skinny. He was a broad person. He had a full body. So how could it be that he was never eating? He was depriving himself of food. He should have looked like Rabban Leib Steinman, who also didn't eat anything. He was a skinny, a very, very skinny individual. How come the Vilna Gaon looked so robust, even though he didn't eat? So they used to say on the Vilna Gaon is given vaksin von Torah. That, if you don't understand Yiddish, so the Vilna Gaon would grow from Torah. Meaning he didn't eat anything physical, but he learned so much that he was able to sustain himself. What does that mean? I once was in Bnei Brak for Shabbos, and I stayed by someone who was, I think at the time, close to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, or pretended he was close to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, I don't know. But he said he was close to them. And he told me that he was once walking with Rav Chaim in the streets of Bnei Brak, and they saw a non-Jew who was walking down the road. And the non-Jew was very heavy set. And the Reb Chaim looked at this non-Jew, and he said to this guy over here, he said, How is that guy so fat? He doesn't have the geshmak of a Rashba. How could he get so big? Doesn't make any sense. Because we don't have a perspective on living like that. You know, people probably noticed I gained a lot of weight this year. Really, I think about dieting. I should really just stop learning. That would really be the solution. But we don't have a perspective like that. We have such a physical life. We're so focused on physicality that we can only see how the physical could sustain us, how it could provide for us, how it could sustain us. But the emes is, the truth is, that the neshama needs to be sustained as well. It could be sustained through the physical, but if someone lives a life of ruchnius, if someone lives a life where their perspective is that everything is spiritual, everything is ruchni, and the physical, the gashmi, is just a vehicle to get to that level of avoda, so then the physical can be sustained by the spiritual as well, and that's the mazon nafshi of the mun that the Klai Yisrael are able to eat in the Midbar. Says the Sfas Emes in the last bold here in source number 2, Uchshenaflu ktsas mizo amadrega, once Klai Yisrael a little bit fell from this level, their situation devolved, amru nafshenu yivesha, they say our soul is dried out, kilo haya batel kol hanefesh ala ruach. Because they said, it used to be that this mun sustained us, but we feel like we're a little lower now. We feel a little more megushim dik. We feel a little more physical now. And that mazon of mun, that mazon nafshi, it's not going to sustain us anymore because we're down a level. We don't feel quite like the Vilna Gaon, quite like Chaim Kanievsky. And that's when they asked for basar. That's when they asked for a physical food because they realized it wasn't going to work in the system as it is. So it's hard to imagine ourselves living up to the level that Al Sheikh is talking about, the Sfas Emes is talking about, the Vilna Gaon was living by, the Chaim Kanievsky was talking about. It's hard to imagine us living up to that level, but the message, obviously, the musar is that we have to find ways to focus ourselves and realize the orientation is Kedusha, the orientation is spirituality. Physicality provides for that. It's a context that allows us to keep going. But within the context of the physical world is where we're supposed to be doing our avoda. But the emes, the truth, the goal in all of life is the spirituality, is the avoda, is the ruchnius. In source number 3, we're not going to do it inside, but it's a comment really additionally to last week. You have a Shnas Tuf Reish Lamed Vav, 1876. So the Sfas Emes here notes that Rashi quotes for us, Rashi says that the Pasuk tells us that we're quoting, counting the Hashem is counting the Jewish people. And they're counted five times, and Rashi tells us because, Bnei Yisrael, are mentioned five times, and Rashi tells us because Chaviv and Chamisha Chumshei Torah, their beloved HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like the five Chumashim in the Torah, that's why they're mentioned five times. So the Sfas Emes asks, why Dafka in this week's Parsha? Why Dafka in Parshas Baha Loscha are they mentioned five times? So he quotes his grandfather, the Chiddush HaRim, who says, it's not specifically here that it needs to be mentioned, except for the fact that this is the Parsha where the Bechiras HaLevim takes place, where the Levim are chosen as the Muram Me'am, as being above and beyond the other parts of Klal Yisrael. So here, the Jewish people needed a chizuk. If you weren't a Levi, you felt rejected. You felt like only the Levim got chosen. Says the Kaddish Baruch Hu, no, I love you like the five Chamisha Chumshe Torah. I love you just as much. I'm choosing the Levim, but I love you just as much, Yisraelim. And the Sfas Emes adds on, and this again is a comment on what we spoke about last week. You'll have to look at it inside tonight on your own. But the Sfas Emes adds on, you have it in the underline and also in Parshas Kairach. He says it's not only picking the other, the Levim, and you're rejected. You guys are also beloved. No, no, no. The very reason I'm picking the Levim is because of the rest of you. Meaning the Levim became so great because of their shaykhus, their support from, and their giving to the community. And remember, we spoke about last week, the individuality, the raising up of a person that becomes great is only through his commitment to the community around him. So the Levim become great through the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves the Jewish people so much. It's not a rejection of everyone else. Adar Abba, just the opposite. It shows, it displays how much the entire community is beloved, that there can be a Levim among them. Let's just flip to page number 2 and we'll end with this. The pasuk in the very beginning of the parsha tells us, "B'ha loisecha es haneros," when Aaron Cohen would light the menorah, "el mul pnei ha menorah ya'iru shivas haneros." So we're reading it in that way, that the neros, the candles, would face and be ignited and shine towards the middle candle. Correct? That's how we all remember it. Rashi spells out for us there were three candles on each side, and they would face towards the middle candle, right in the middle. What's the problem with the pasuk? What does the pasuk say? El mul pnei ha-menorah ya'iru shivas haneros. What should it have said? It should have said six. It should have said six. There's one candle in the middle, and the six face it on either side. But the seventh can't face itself, can it? So Rashi doesn't really help us with this. The commentaries on Rashi do a little bit. The Gur Aryeh from the Maharal I put for you in small font here has three or four, I think, answers. I only put two for you on the page. One suggestion he has is that you could chop up the pasuk a little bit differently. You could say, Daber l'aron v'amarta elav, Baha loschas haneros el mul pnei ha-menorah. when you light the menorah, you should be facing it. Ya'iru shivas aneros. And the seven candles should shine, should be lit. But that's not the pasuk pshat in the pasukim. That's not the way the pasuk is supposed to be read. It's el mul pnei menorah ya'iru shivas aneros, that they're all going to face the middle candle. So how is that possible? So the Sfas Emes in Tuf Reish Lamed Ches, 1878, the Sfas Emes comments, he asks this question, and he explains based on a medrash. The medrash says that there was a king who asked a servant of his to please prepare a meal for him. And the servant was a lowly, poor, impoverished individual, and he prepared a meal. But when the king got there, the king came with his entourage, with his dishes, with his fancy pomp and circumstance, and the guy looked, and he was so embarrassed. He prepared this measly meal, and the king has all of this grandeur. What's he going to provide for the king? So he hid all of his meal, and he pretended that he didn't prepare. And the king said, "No, I want your meal." So the king passed, he broke all of his kalim, and he took the meal from the poor person who prepared it for him. So the Sfas Emes says that the Medrash is trying to tell us as follows. When Aaron HaKohen lit the menorah, he looked up and he saw a different menorah. He saw the Emes menorah from the upper worlds. He saw the menorah to which all of our avodah is shining. He saw the menorah which corresponds to the menorah in this world. And he thought to himself, or he could have thought to himself, what am I doing, lighting a menorah? This is nothing compared to the real deal in the Olam HaZalyon and with the Malachim's avodah, HaKadosh Baruch, who benefits from that, so to speak, obviously. So what am I doing lighting a menorah down here? So says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, no, I want your menorah. I want your suda that you prepared down here. Even though I'm the king and I could ask for anything, I want the lowly, so to speak, avoda from down here in this world. Says the Sfas Emes, that's the afal pi ken ya'iru shivas aneros. El mul pnei ha-menorah doesn't refer to the menorah on our plane, in our Beis HaMikdash. The seven neros of our menorah shine directly towards the ha-menorah, the menorah in the upper realm, the menorah in the upper world, even though we can't possibly live up to an avodah of malachim, an avodah of the upper realms of a world beyond ours, but even so, our menorah shines towards that menorah, and it's a chizuk to all of us to do that avodah, even though we feel embarrassed, or even specifically because we feel embarrassed, our avodah is so desired, el mul pnei ha-menorah, shining towards the emes ha-menorah, Ya'iru Shiva Saniros, our seven candles are lit and face. Beautiful pshat from the Sfas Emes. This shouldn't have a number five, but if you look at the bottom of page number 2, and we'll end with this. So when my wife's Zaidi passed away 5 years ago, so it was an unfortunate circumstance, the way it was arranged for our family. My wife was out of town. She was in Omaha, Nebraska. I was in New York, and whatever. There was a lot of flying, basically, different people, different places. My wife actually missed the Levaya and the Shiva. I was able to get to the Levaya, and then I had to fly to Omaha to be with the kids in there. But so I didn't give a hesped at the Levaya, but I remember writing some Divrei Torah down, sharing with the family. So this is a snippet from one of the Divrei Torah that we had put together in honor of Zaidi's memory during the Shiva. So I had pointed out this question on Rashi. What's the pshat that it's saying seven neros face each other, really is six neros face each other? And the answer I gave, I don't know if it's an answer better than the Sfas Emes or different than the Sfas Emes. It might even be similar to something that the Maharal is saying, but I think it's an important message anyways. What I was trying to explain is that based on a story, I used to watch the wedding video of our wedding. It's not normal to watch your own wedding video, I understand that, but it was always playing in the car because they had a DVD player and they didn't know what to do with it. So my in-laws like put the wedding video in there. So whenever we got in the car, it was always on. So I know my chassan's tish speech by heart, and so does my then 8-year-old sister-in-law. So I used to watch the scene. I remember our Zaidi dancing in the middle. And as he was dancing, you know, all of the children and all the grandchildren looked at him as the leader, as the patriarch, and they were smiling, they were shining, and they were radiating towards him. And it really felt like all the neros were facing the middle candle. But then as you watch him, you see a certain love, a certain excitement, a certain leadership quality, and a certain humility at the same time. That even as all of the neros are shining towards him, all of the children, all the grandchildren are shining towards him, somehow he's also shining in the same direction. Somehow he's not leading them towards him. He's not a leader who's trying to get followers. He's a leader who's trying to follow with everyone else towards a greater light, towards a Kadosh Baruch Hu, towards an ultimate menorah. And there are plenty of leaders who know how to lead people, but what I was trying to get across was, and you see in the bold here, there are a select few individuals who are able to lead with the people. And that's something that I always felt about our Zaidi, and we miss him this way dearly, but he was that middle candle to which we all turned. And yet it always felt like he was one of us. He was going in the same direction. He was leading us, all of the candles, all of the Jewish neshamas, looking for a little more inspiration. He was leading us as equals, together as a group. So the Shivas Aneros, certainly six of them were leaning towards the middle one. But when you think about it, it was really Shivas HaNeros Ya'iru. It was really seven Neros that were all lighting and leading in the right direction. So B'siyat HaShemayah, we should be Zocha. Close to the Yahrzeit site, we should take from the Ha'aros of Mai Zeidi, and all of us should learn from it, from the Sfas Emes and from the Psukim, that we should be Neros, we should be candles who lead other people. But we should never be leading people to ourselves. We should be leading everyone together towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu and towards Mashiach. And B'siyat HaShemayah, if we do that, so hopefully we'll be Zocha to greater lives of Avodas Hashem in this world, and ultimately to Zocha to the Emes HaOlam, the Olam HaMashiach, B'meher V'Yameinu Amin. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos.